Yes, I've just started to hear you, so please proceed.
Okay. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Thank you for coming to this session. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. Tawakkaltu ala al-hayy al-lazi la yamut. Alhamdulillah al-lazi lam yattakhidh waladan wa lam yakun lahu sharikun fil mulk wa lam yakun lahu waliyyun min adh-dhulli wa kabbirhu takbira. Thank you for coming to this session. Fasting during the long summer days in some Western countries. This presentation that I'm going to have for you is based on an article that I wrote a couple of years ago, and this article is available on the Exploring Islam website, where you can see the detailed arguments there. So basically, what I'm going to do is to first of all define the scope of the talk, what the problem actually is, looking at the dominant view and then the less dominant view, discussion and conclusion. So the first thing I would like to clarify is that this discussion is not about places where at times in a year there is no daylight within 24 hours. The discussion is about places where at times in a year the length of the daylight is close to 24 hours, like 19 hours or 23 hours. We do know that when the situation is such that we do not have a proper day within 24 hours or proper night within 24 hours, then everybody, every scholar agrees that we need to follow the timing of maybe Mecca or the timing of the closest Muslim country or the timing of the closest country with normal day and night hours. The question that I'm trying to look at, the situation that I'm trying to look at, is a situation where we do have day and night within 24 hours. However, the length of the day is extremely long. So that is the situation that I would like to discuss today. Explaining the problem for you, see, this is the graph that shows the variation of daylight during summertime in Mecca. So as you look at this, the length of the day in Mecca varies between just above 12 hours to just above 14 hours. So the total variation of daylight in Mecca is between 12 to 14 hours. So no day seems to be less than 12 hours daylight during the month of Ramadan. No day seems to be more than 14 hours and 24 minutes. And the variation in between the two figures is just above 2 hours. I would like you to consider this and compare it with one of the examples of one of the northwestern European countries, like Oslo. Okay? So Oslo, as you can see, the shortest daytime in Oslo is around 9 hours, 9 hours and 36 minutes. The longest day is around 21 hours. And the distance between the two, the variation is very, very long if you compare it with the situation in Mecca. So the green line shows the variation of daylight in Mecca. The red line shows the variation of daylight in Oslo. If we look at this in tables, in Mecca, the shortest fasting time in hours is 12 hours, 11 minutes. The longest fasting time is 14 hours, 55 minutes. The difference between the shortest and the longest fasting time in each day is 2 hours. And 44 minutes. If you compare that with Oslo, the shortest time is 8 hours and 43 minutes. The longest time is 20 hours and 31 minutes. And the variation between the two is nearly 12 hours, half a day. You can see the difference between the two cities. So the shortest fasting time in Oslo is 3.5 hours shorter than Mecca. The longest fasting time in Oslo is 5 hours and 36 minutes, more than Mecca. And the most important thing, the variation between the shortest and longest in Oslo, there's 9 hours more variation than Mecca. Now, we perhaps will come back to this table when I will explain a few more points that we can get from this table. So basically then, the problem will be that we end up with situations in which Muslims need to fast for something like 20 hours, 21 hours, 22 hours, or even 23 hours per day. While in Mecca, the original center of Islam, and in most other Muslim countries, people fast around 14 hours or so during the summertime. In some places in the world, like Oslo, the minority Muslim population, which is already disadvantaged by the lack of social support during the month of Ramadan, needs to fast more than 20 hours per day. That is about 1.5 times compared to fasting times of other Muslims. Cities like Luleå in Sweden experience fasting time of about 23 hours per day during the summer. What makes this more difficult is that during the less than 4 hours, or about 1 hour in case of Luleå, that is available between sunset and dawn, the person breaks the fast, offers Maghrib and Isha prayer, perhaps wishes to participate in what is known as Tarawih prayers, and then also needs to have suhoor before starting another fast. And this will go on for one whole month. So just consider this. For instance, I live in Glasgow. The Fajr time here will be somewhere around 2 o'clock after midnight. And the Maghrib time is somewhere around half 10, quarter to 11. So first of all, the length of fasting is extremely high. So we are talking about something like 20, 21 hours. And then also imagine this. It is now half 10 midnight, before midnight. I'm breaking my fast. Now I have only about 3 hours to do my Maghrib, do my Isha. If I want to attend Tarawih, then attending Tarawih and having suhoor. And of course, during this time, I also have family responsibilities and then have some work to do and getting ready to sleep and get rest to be able to go to the work the day after, etc., etc. So it is difficult. I'm not saying it is impossible. I have tried it. It is possible, but it is difficult. It's not very easy. So there are solutions, of course. So no scholar says that, you know, no matter what, you need to fast in this situation. Every scholar agrees that this situation is not very normal. We need to do something about it. However, the solutions are different. And this is what I have categorized as a dominant view and a less dominant view. And I'm going to explain each one of them one by one. So the dominant view simply says, fast if you can, fast another time of the year if you cannot. So it's very straightforward. Basically, okay, you say it is 21 hours, etc., try it. If you find that you can do it and it's not very uncomfortable for you, keep fasting. And if you find that it is really difficult and you cannot make it, then there's no problem. Leave it for this month and you can do your fast for the month of Ramadan, let's say in 6 months' time, during the winter time, where the fasting time will be actually very, very, very short. And that is actually a very interesting solution. So for instance, if you consider that in Glasgow, during the winter time, the Fajr will be somewhere around 8 in the morning, and the Maghrib time, it will be somewhere around 4:30 in the afternoon, then fasting during that time will be actually wonderful physically, because it's only, it's like you have a very late lunch. That's all. You know, around 8 o'clock, you will have a huge breakfast. You just delay your lunch for 4 hours, and that is your fasting. So the dominant view is like that. I just have some quotes for you. So for instance, among the Sunni scholars, we have the Center of Religious Statement of Saudi Arabia, chaired at the time by Ibn Baz, who says that verily God has addressed all believers about the obligation of fasting. So the Almighty says, believers, fasting has been made obligatory upon you as it was made upon those before you, so that you become fearful of God. And the beginning and end of fasting is explained, as the Almighty says, and eat and drink until the white thread of dawn is totally evident to you from the black thread of night. Then complete the fast till nightfall. And then Ibn Baz goes on to say, and this directive is not specific to any city or any type of people. Rather, it is made as a general rule, and the people who are the subject of the question, those living in places where night during summer lasts only 3 hours, are included in this general rule. Of course, by this fatwa, Ibn Baz does not mean that whatever happens, you need to fast. What he means is that your taklif, your duty, is to fast, even if the day is long. Now, if you cannot do it, then of course you can do it in another time during the year. Among the Shia scholars, for instance, we have Mahdi Hadavi Tahrani, who says, in the areas that have normal night and day, meaning sun rises and sets in 24 hours, Muslims need to follow the local times. And if they fall in extreme difficulty in doing this because of the length of the day, then they are not obliged to fast. They will need to make it up, and they can do this during the short days of winter. So that is the dominant view, which I think almost everybody is familiar with. Now, if I can proceed to explain the less dominant view. Okay, before that, let me also explain this. The observations of the dominant view. So what I'm trying to do here is to, in fact, deconstruct the view of the dominant view and to see where their view is coming from. So first of all, of course, we have in the Quran, وَكُلُوا وَشْرَبُوا حَتَّى يَتَبَيَّنَ لَكُمُ الْخَيْطُ الْأَبْيَضُ مِنَ الْخَيْطِ الْأَسْوَدِ مِنَ الْفَجْرِ ثُمَّ أَتِمُوا الصِّيَامَ إِلَى اللَّيْلِ. So eat and drink until the white thread of dawn is totally evident to you from the black thread of night. Then complete the fast till nightfall. And then, of course, there is solution, there is an allowance for those who fall ill or for those who travel. وَمَنْ كَانَ مَرِيدًا أَوْ عَلَىٰ سَفَرٍ فَعِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ بِكُمُ الْيُسْرِ وَلَا يُرِيدُ بِكُمُ الْعُسْرِ. And whoever is sick or upon a journey, then he shall fast like number of other days. God desires ease for you, and he does not desire for you difficulty. So basically, the basis of the dominant view is that verse 2:187, the first verse, makes it clear that acceptable fasting is specified as one that starts from dawn and ends at the sunset. And then verse 185 opens a door for difficulties. The door is the simple permission to skip the fasting if one is ill or is in trouble. So that is the basis of the dominant view. Based on that, the dominant view does not see any problem here. The simple argument is that, look, we don't mind if the length of the day is 21 hours or 23 hours. That doesn't matter. Still, your duty is to fast from dawn to the night. However, if you cannot do it, if it is difficult for you, do not worry, because God has given permission that if you fall ill or if you are traveling, then you can fast during another time of the year. So there's basically no problem here, because You either can do it, then you may do, you will do it, or if you can do it, you will do it later. Now, the dominant view, therefore, is on the basis of four assumptions, and I'm trying to explain these assumptions here. So, assumption number one, the key specification of the Quran about fasting time is its start and its end. So the first assumption is that this start and end are actually the backbone of the specification of the Quran about fasting. Start and the end points, down to the evening. Assumption number two, the Quran uses a technical language in this specification. So when it says, for instance, night, you know, أَتِمُّ السِّيَامَ إِلَى اللَّيْلِ, so when it says finish it till night, night basically means when sun goes down from the horizon. So that's a technical language that the Quran is using. That is the assumption of the dominant view. Number three, this technical language is meant to be universal. So basically, you know, when this Sharia came, there was this appreciation that there can be Muslims in other places in the world where there can be like 22 hours, 20 hours, 23 hours a day in a day in the month of Ramadan. And yes, still for them, this specification applies. Their duty is that they need to fast from dawn to the sunset. So basically the assumption is that God expects a Muslim who lives in some very northern European countries to fast, even the number of hours of fasting is like 23 hours, unless the Muslim thinks that he cannot do it. Otherwise, it is his duty. And then the fourth assumption is that not being able to fast easily due to extreme abnormal fasting hours is equal or comparable to being ill or being in travel. See, the verse that gives allowance is on the basis of fasting hours of Mecca or Medina, and then says if you are ill or if you go to travel, then you are allowed to fast later. Now the dominant view is on the basis of the assumption that this is also equally applicable to the person who finds it difficult to fast, not because he is ill, he is very healthy, not because he is traveling, no, he is staying at home, but because the fasting hours is extremely high. So these are four assumptions of the dominant view. The conclusion of the dominant view from the above is that there is absolutely no way to change the time of fasting, and that this is in fact not needed anyway, since the person is allowed to skip the fasting if it is beyond his tolerance and to make it up later. So let us now look at the less dominant view. The less dominant view says adopt a shorter, in other words, normal timing for the fast. A suggestion is that you can adopt the Mecca time, you can adopt the closest Muslim city, you can adopt the, what people call it, the Earth day hour, which is normal day hour on the face of Earth. So let us look at some of the options that the less dominant view gives here. So for instance, the Islamic Fiqh Council under the auspices of the World Islamic Mission Mecca says fast for the length of time in the closest country that has normal day lengths, 45 degrees latitude. Or for instance, Dar al-Ifta al-Misriya, it says fast for the same duration as those cities in which the Quran was revealed, as they have the average day. Okay, so there are some solutions here. So basically, what the less dominant view says is that your duty is not to fast, say, 21 hours, 23 hours. That is not your duty at the first place. So that allowance that the dominant view is talking about is not even applicable to you, because the duty is not that. Your duty is to fast to the number of hours that is similar to the place that Quran was revealed at the first place, and that is like Mecca and Medina. So what you need to do is to find what is the normal length of day and to fast during that time, not more than that. So some examples. So Darul Ifta al-Misriya, Khalid Abdul Qadir says that it is permitted for Muslims in Norway and others with similar situation to fast to the length of fasting in Mecca or Medina during long days and short nights, or can adopt the timing of the closest city with moderate days and nights and start the fast from dawn and break it in accordance to the hours of fasting of the city that was taken as the reference and do not need to wait till sunset. So please do consider that these fatwas are about a situation where you do have proper day and night within 24 hours. However, the time is extreme. Okay. Another example, like Ibn Yusuf Khali, he has a very interesting website that I encourage everyone to have a look at. The name of the website is also interesting, for people who think.org. He's a jurist and a very well educated jurist. He says that there are several opinions on the issue, all the obvious result of ijtihad. Solely on the basis of istihsan, my suggestion is that the fasting day be based on the earth day calculation. Based on our research, an average earth day equates to roughly 12 hours of sunlight. So given this average, a person in the northern or southern region, taking into consideration the normal commencement of the workday, could start the fast at approximately 6 a.m. and end it at 6 p.m. So basically, again, what he says is that you do not need to follow dawn to night rule here. You can just look at what people call the earth day, which is a normal daytime. Example from Shia scholars. So for instance, Mukarram Shirazi is one of the mujtahids in Qom. He says, Makarim Shirazi. He says, in different books of jurisprudence, when there are issues that are related to abnormal conditions, the view is to follow the norm. Therefore, in areas where days and nights are longer than the norm, one needs to adopt the conditions of a normal, moderate place. So these are some of the examples of the less dominant view. I'm giving you here a list of people, mashayikh, scholars, etc., who have given the same fatwa. And of course, it's a long list, but just to show you that although it is less dominant view, but it is a view of some well-recognized scholars. It's not the view of a few young Muslim researchers who are trying to find a way out of it. It is a well-thought issue by many well-known scholars. You can see the list here, and there are more than them as well. Sheikh Shaltut, the famous former head of Al-Azhar, is among them. Another thing that we need to consider is that this is not just about fasting time. Some scholars have also argued for the prayer times to be adapted. This is very interesting. For instance, Imam Muhammad Abdu, the former Grand Mufti of Egypt, he says that Allah, who revealed the Quran, knower of the unseen and creator of the heavens, gave ordinances that can be followed by everyone alike. The command to establish prayers is general. The Prophet specified prayer times based on the hours that suit countries with moderate hours and which constitute the greater part of the world. This was the norm until Islam reached those countries where day and night is longer than usual. Muslims living in these countries may estimate prayer times depending on their independent reasoning and in analogy to the timing specified by the Prophet in the Hadith of Al-Dajjal. The Hadith of Dajjal, as I'm sure most of you know, is a Hadith in which the Prophet is explaining the situation where Dajjal comes, and the Prophet says that the duration of day would be around like 1 year or 1 month or 1 week in that situation. And the companions asked him, what should we do? And the Prophet, based on the Hadith, if it is authentic, the Prophet says you need to estimate the time based on the normal situation. Let me, for the sake of time, skip this one go to... Okay, let me say this one as well. It needs to be appreciated that the issue is not just the difficulty due to the length of the fasting period in these countries. Some physically strong Muslims may feel that this is not difficult. Another aspect of the above is whether long fasting hours are tolerable or not. It certainly does not integrate with typical daily schedules of people. Looking at the start and the end of fasting during the winter and summer in the Arabian Peninsula reveals that fasting time was set in a way that it would nicely fit in with the typical daily schedules of people. Therefore, according to the less dominant view, the fact that people can survive when fasting very long hours is not relevant. So basically what this says is that, look, when you look at Arabian countries, Saudi Arabia in particular, the Fajr time is very close or the same as the time of at that point of the day that people wake up and go to the work. It is very close to that. Okay, so it's around 6 o'clock, maybe 5, maybe 7. It's very close to the time that people would go for work. So you can easily imagine that the person will go to sleep earlier during the evening, and then he wakes up, he does the Fajr, Suhoor, Fajr prayer, and then he can just go for the work or rest for a few minutes and then go for the work. When he comes back from the work, that is around 5 or 6 afternoon, it is nearly the time of breaking the fast. So he comes back, just getting ready, and then it is iftar time. And he breaks his fast. So as you can see, the timing is very nicely fit with the routine schedule of people in their daily life, normal daily life. Now compare this with a person who needs to have suhoor at 1 o'clock after midnight. Yeah, many people when they have suhoor at 1 o'clock after midnight find it extremely difficult to go to sleep. Okay. And then this person needs to go to work, let's say around 7 or 8 in the morning. And then he comes back around 6, around 5, around 7 in the evening, very tired, sitting down. He then still need to wait for another 4 hours, another 3 hours to break the fast. And once he breaks the fast, then there is a race towards doing everything. So you break your fast at, let's say, 10:30 in the night or 11 o'clock in the night, then you need to do your maghrib, do your isha, read your Quran, if you want to attend the tarawih, be with your family, be with your kids, prepare for the day tomorrow, have your suhoor, have your fajr, and go to sleep. So it's not at all in line with the routine day life of human being. Mustafa al-Zarqa stated in his book, generalizing the principle of adopting normal prayer times to countries of extreme latitude based on the ability to distinguish between day and night, regardless of the great difference in their length, totally contradicts the objectives of Islamic law and the legal principle of mitigating harm. It is unreasonable to distribute the prayers performed during daylight hours and night over a half-hour period, as it is likewise unreasonable to break one's fast for 1 hour and fast for 23. Let me explain this a little bit, and this is again can be based on experience. See, during the winter time, for instance, it is very much possible, if you delay your Dhuhr prayer a little bit, it is very much possible that you read your Dhuhr and Asr and Maghrib and Isha within 2 hours in Glasgow. So within 2 hours, you can read your Dhuhr and Asr and Maghrib and Isha. That is because the Azan al-Maghrib, the sunset is around 4:30. Okay? And then there are other countries further north, you can do that within an hour. So this prayer time that was supposed to be a regular, consistent reminder of our duties to the Almighty and was therefore spread within 24 hours, in these situations can be done within 1 or 2 hours. So you read it within 1 or 2 hours, and then for something like 20, 21, 22 hours, you have nothing to do, no prayers, except of course the Fajr prayer. You have no other prayer to do. This is during the winter. And then during the summer, that would be the situation about fasting that I just explained. So when he says that this basically defeats the purpose of these prayers or defeats the purpose of fasting, this is what he actually means. Now, of course, the dominant view disagrees with the less dominant view, and this disagreement is based on a number of objections. So what I'm going to do is to read these objections and to look what the less dominant view has to say about them. So the first objection is that changing the time of fasting goes against the explicit instructions of the Quran, where the start and the end of the fasting are clearly mentioned. The second objection is to suggest changing the time of fasting is in effect questioning the universality of the instructions of the Quran. And ijtihad is only allowed where Sharia is silent. Yet here the Quran is not silent, as we are given a clear solution in verse 2:185, where it says that a person who is ill and a traveler are not expected to fast. So there are three objections. So let's see what is the response of the less dominant view to these objections. So objection number one, changing the time of fasting goes against the explicit instructions of the Quran. What they say is that starting the fast at dawn and ending it at sunset is not the backbone of the instruction of fasting in the verse 187 in Surah Al-Baqarah. Rather, it seems that the backbone of the instruction is the reasonable length of fasting that these two points produce for the location where the Quran was revealed. This was also in line with daily routine of individuals. So what they say is that, look, if you think about it, the specification that the Quran has given here from dawn to sunset, the main issue there was to define two points at the day. So it was the length of the day that was the matter of specification, not the starting point and the ending point. To illustrate that, sometimes we have this thing, we call it mind testing, which means in order to understanding a situation better, imagining a different situation. It is not very academic way of doing and think, academic way of arguing, but it does help in trying to understand an argument. So what they say is that just do this mind test. If the Quran was not revealed in Arabian Peninsula, but in Sweden, would dawn and sunset still have been the start and end of fasting? Imagine that in a parallel world, Prophet Muhammad was actually a person from Sweden, and he was actually sent to people in Sweden. Do we still think that we would have a verse of the then Quran, Swedish Quran, that would say fast from the dawn and finish it at the dark? Does that really come? Because if that comes, then that means that God at that situation would expect people to fast for 22 hours, 23 hours. And in some areas in Sweden, that would then mean to fast for 2 days, because there are situations where sun does not go down during some days in the summer. So basically, the answer to the first objection is that we are not changing the instruction of the Quran. The main instruction of the Quran is about the length of the day, not the start and the end time of the day. There's also a further point raised by some of the scholars of the less dominant view. Sorry, that title should be the less dominant view. So a further point raised by some of the scholars of the less dominant view, what they say is that the concept of Earth Day, as quoted by scholars like Ibn Yusuf Khalil, points to the fact that no matter when the sun rises and when it sets for human being, the routine of day and night activities are mostly unchanged. For example, whether darkness starts at 4 or 11, for a human being with a normal day routine, the time of having dinner and sleeping is the same. So for instance, if Dr. Shehzad Salim comes to Glasgow and be my guest, and if I tell him, Dr. Salim, please come to my house at night. If it is winter, I don't think he will come to my house at 4 o'clock, although it will be dark at 4. If it is winter, I don't think he will come as late as 10:45, before midnight. I think when I ask Dr. Salim to attend my house, he will come some in the evening. I think he will come somewhere around 7 or 8. That is normally what we expect, no matter what, where the darkness is. Now, verse 2:187, while referring to the start of the time of fasting in a very technical way, يَتَبَيِّنَ لَكُمُ الْخَيْتُ الْأَبْيَضُ مِنَ الْخَيْتِ الْأَسْوَدِ, refers to the time of ending of fast in a less technical way. It just says لَيْل. In line with the concept of the Earth Day, one may argue that night in this verse does not refer to what is known as scientific night, but simply means night in the way that is commonly used by people. And, you know, when we look at the Quran, we find that in the Quran, we do have this reference to night, or even this reference to prayer times. So please look at this, for instance. Number one, we have this verse, Surah An-Nur. You who have not come to the age of puberty, ask your permission before they come to your presence on three occasions. So children who are near the age of puberty, they need to ask permission when they want to come to their parents. Before Fajr prayer, and while you put off your clothes for the noonday, and after the Isha prayer. These three times are of privacy for you. Other than these times, there is no sin on you or on them to move about. Now this is very interesting. Please look how the Quran is showing the fact that the prayer times are fitting with the routine of people. It says if you come before Fajr prayer, you need to ask for permission. Well, that is not going to be necessary if you are living in Glasgow during the summertime, because Fajr prayer in Glasgow is 1:30 to after midnight. I don't think my children need to ask permission if they want to come and see me just around 11 or 12 o'clock. I'm awake and my wife is awake anyway. We normally stay awake and do our Fajr prayer, then we go to sleep. Or for instance, the Isha time during the winter in Glasgow is around 6 o'clock. I don't think my children need to come and ask my permission to see me at 6 o'clock in the evening, because that is exactly the time that all families are gathering around. So as you can see, these specifications are fitting for the Arabian situation, not for all the situations. And out of his mercy, he has made for you the night and the day, that you may rest therein. Now, when it says the night and the day, that you may rest therein, again, one that is living in a place that night is only 2 hours or maybe 5 hours may question Quran as we appreciate is lisan al-urfi. Okay, zaban al-urf, lisan al-urfi. The language of the Quran is not scientific language, it's conventional language. So one other argument that some of the scholars, not all of them, some of the scholars in the less dominant view is that layl can easily be interpreted by hour rather than by be still 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. Objection B. Suggestion to change the timing of fasting means questioning the universality of the Quran. Now this is very interesting because interestingly enough, it seems easier for the less dominant view to defend the universality of the Quran, and it seems like it is actually the dominant view that may have problems to fully defend the idea of universality of the Quran. Basically, the implication of the dominant view is that the instruction of the Quran about fasting is not practical or is hardly practical in some areas of the earth. This is why the less dominant view still sees the Quranic instruction to be universally applicable, because the less dominant view concentrates on the length, not at the start and at the end time. So the same objection can be raised by the less dominant view. An objection, the third one, ijtihad is only allowed where Sharia is silent, and here Sharia is not silent. It says that if you are ill or if you are traveling, you can leave the fasting. Now, the assumption of the dominant view is that objection is that, number one, that taklif, obligation, is to fast from dawn to sunset, irrespective of the length of the day, and that those who travel or are ill, as per verse 2.185. Both the assumptions seem to be questionable from the perspective of the less dominant view. So number one, taklif. I just quote for you what Sheikh Shaltut says. Fasting for 23 hours of 24 hours is an assumed obligation that is against the wisdom of the best judge of judges and the mercy of the most merciful of merciful ones. Ahkam al-Hakimin, Arham al-Rahim. Please do consider the answer to this argument is not that, well, you know, if it is difficult for you, you can do it later. The argument says that I cannot even start to appreciate and accept that it is my taklif to fast this long hour, even if you then say that if you cannot do it, you have the allowance. Just thinking that God expects me to do that if I can, that itself seems to be very much against the concept of God that we know and the fact that he's Ahkam al-Hakimin and Arham al-Rahimin. The less dominant view considers the taklif to be about the length of fasting rather than its exact start and end time. And also, is the Quran silent about it? Well, verse 2.185 is in fact silent about the issue of extreme time of fasting. We should not ignore this fact. It is the dominant view that interprets the verse, analyzes it, and applies it to this new issue. It is therefore not correct to say that Quran is not silent about this issue. Quran is silent about the issue because the matters that the Quran is talking about are the matters of illness and going to travel. These are matters that happen for individuals. We are talking about the situation that the whole framework, the whole setup is abnormal situation. People who cannot do that, it is not because they are ill. It is not because they are weak. It is not because they are traveling. It is because they are put in abnormal situation. If we then apply verse 185 to these people, it is our ijtihad that has done that. We can never say that the Quran is telling that. We are using our ijtihad. So yes, the Sharia is actually silent according to the less dominant view. The dominant view itself has done ijtihad by applying the allowance in verse 185 to this contemporary issue. There seems to be an illogical analogy here in that verse 185 is giving permission for exceptional cases where it is solely the specific situation of individuals, illness or travel, initiated by them or in them, that makes it difficult for them to fast. However, the issue of fasting long hours is not about specific situation of individuals initiated by them. It is the directive, not the individual situation, that has caused the issue. This tiny yet important difference makes the analogy less than flawless, or more than flawless. Now, I'm nearly done here. Before finishing, just wanted to show you something here, if I can, using my browser. So please just hang on for a second. Let me see. Okay. Okay, I think you can now see this. This is the internet tool that you can use in order to see the length of the day and night in different places in the world. Now, basically what you have here, this white or cream area shows the length of the day, and this dark area shows the length of the night. So this is the number of daylight hours, and we are looking at different months of the year here on the horizontal axis, and we have the map, the whole Earth globe here. Now you see this line, this yellow line in the center of the Earth. This situation that you see here is for this yellow line, okay, where the night and the day have equal length. By using this button here, I can bring this up. Sorry, it's this one. By using this button here, I can change the situation. See, I'm changing it. So let's get here. So we are not talking about countries that are in that in within that yellow on that yellow line, as you can see, that yellow circle at the top of the Earth. You can see the length of the day is now reaching 18 hours in the month of June. Okay? Now, what I want to say is that let us consider that we are arguing with somebody who is in favor of the dominant view. So such scholar would say that, look, the only situation where you are allowed to apply a different timing is when you do not have proper day or proper night within 24 hours. In other words, when the length of the day is more than 24 hours. So let us see that situation, okay? So let us bring this to that situation. Look at this. This is that situation. As you can see, if you are on this circle at the top of the Earth, or equivalent of that at the south of the Earth, then during times like June, the day never ends in 24 hours. So such scholar in this situation will say, yes, now you are allowed, now you are allowed to adopt a different timing. What that scholar may find it difficult to think of is this. Let's just say, okay, what if we come a little bit lower than that? Let's say just here, just short of 24 hours, let's say 23 hours. Are you saying that we need to fast for, the taklif is that we need to fast for 23 hours? Because it is now within 24 hours? What if it is like 23 hours and 59 minutes? Because as you can see, all of this is possible. See, all of that is possible. I can easily change this number to anything, and you can see the results. It just gets more and more and more. See? I change this to 69 latitude, I change this to 68, I change this to 67, 66 latitude, let's say 66.5, and we are now here. Look at this. This is very interesting. So it is now 11 hours and around maybe 30 minutes. So the scholar says if the daytime reaches to 24 hours, you need to adopt a different timing. But based on his argument, then it is not, if it is not 24 hours, if it is 23 hours and 59 minutes, you just have 1 minute of night, then yeah, you, the taklif is that you need to fast unless you cannot do it. Does that sound rational? So let me get back to my slides. So the problem here, as you can see, there is a problem of where to draw the line with the dominant view. We all agree that if the daylight is 24 or more hours, then we need to adopt a normal timing and not fast during another time of the year. What if the daytime is 23 hours 59 minutes? What if it is 23 hours? What if it is 22 hours? What if it is 21 hours? Where should we draw the line? At what point does the dominant view decide that normal time should not be adopted? Instead, we should either fast same time or fast at another time. So if the dominant view says, look, the criteria is whether you have proper day during 24 hours or not. As long as you do have the proper day, then your taklif is to fast, unless you can't. Question. There is this point at the face of Earth, I just showed you, we do have those points, where the day is 23 hours and 59 minutes. We do have proper day. The night is 1 minute, the rest is day. So you are saying my taklif is to fast for 23 hours and 59 minutes, and within that 1 minute that remains, I need to do my iftar, read my maghrib and isha, and then have my suhoor and do my fast again. Is that the case? I'm sure any sane person will say, no, that is not your taklif. Then my question would be, okay, what if it is not 23 hours and 59 minutes, if it is 23 hours and 30 minutes, then what? So that sane person may say, okay, half an hour is still too short. No, it is not your taklif. So then my question will be, then where should we draw the line? So welcome to the camp of the less dominant view. This is the whole argument of the less dominant view, that we are facing abnormal situation and we cannot use those specifications of start and end time for these situations. I also encourage you to think about it the other way around. In fact, the other way around is even funnier and more strange. Consider in places on the earth that during the winter time, the whole duration of day is 1 hour. So basically, what we say to the person is that your taklif is to fast for 1 hour every day. Do we really consider that a fasting, the one that encourages taqwa, etc., etc.? Really? Just 1 hour? Or in some situations, half an hour? So just don't eat for half an hour in this country during the winter, and that is your fasting. Really? Is that what we mean by Quran being universal? See, this is the outcome of being so rigid in thinking about that instruction of the Quran and considering the starting point and the ending point to be the key things rather than the length. Of course, there are some practical considerations that I will skip. Maybe it comes up in the questions and answers. And at the end of the day, It is important to appreciate that God expects us to act in accordance with an honest understanding of our duties. As long as a religious opinion is formulated with that honesty by people of knowledge, and as long as those who accept that religious opinion are doing so in the honest pursuit of truth, there should not be any worries nor any clashes between the adherents of different religious views. This was surely the way of the first generation of Muslims who witnessed the Prophet of God sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and may the Almighty guide us all in following their path. So that will be the end of my talk, and I'm happy to hear your comments and possibly questions. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum, can you hear me, Brother Abdul Rahim? Can you hear me?
Brother, I can hear you.
Yeah, first of all, I want to appreciate your own and very to the point presentation. Actually, I have two questions. First question is that all of your presentation is based on the difference of timing in different countries, so what we have to do, what we have new solution for them. What can we do the same induction and expand your solution to those countries which are not following the time difference, but they are following with the weather, hard weather situation, like in parts of Pakistan, where the time of fasting is normal, like earth hour, but the weather situation is very hot. Like in some parts of Pakistan, summer, the temperature is more than 45 and 50 degrees centigrade. So can we expand that solution to that they will reduce, or they will do the fast on some other time? So my question is that, can we expand that induction to another situation like weather conditions in other countries? The first question. The second question is that the views you mentioned of the scholars regarding this issue, there's none of the one scholar that belong to these countries, because the solution must be suitable with the health, with the atmosphere, with the situation, with the environment of these countries, concerned countries. So all the scholars, they belong to the Arab or some other countries. Why there's no point of view from that countries that facing the problem, the scholars there?
Okay. Can you hear me, brother? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, brother.
Okay. So answering to your first question, so the question is, can we also use the same sort of perhaps ijtihad in situation where the problem is not about the timing, but the problem is about the weather conditions, like when it is extremely hot? I think, if we consider the Arabia as the base where these regulations have come, I think we can then easily see where a situation can be considered abnormal, and where the situation may not be considered as abnormal. I'm sure you agree with me that in many places in Arabia, heat during the summer is extremely high, very, very high. And of course, we also know that at those times when these regulations came down, there weren't any cooling facilities. People had very basic ways of living. So given that, despite that hot weather and that very difficult weather situation in Arabia, They sometimes had sandstorms, you know, and that sort of thing. Still, these regulations came for them. So I think that does not allow us any flexibility to change the timing simply due to weather. In particular, these days, that in most places, people do have very good facilities to remain both safe and also convenient within the shelters and their houses. As for your second question, brother, that actually is a very good question. Not that your first one is not good, but the second one is even better. The second question was that all these scholars that I referred to seem to be Arab scholars. Why no scholar from these countries have said anything? That is very interesting. See, brother, the reason, number one, the reason these scholars have actually talked about this and have come with this fatwa is due to the continuous struggle and questions of people and students of Islam in these particular countries. Some of these scholars managed to come and visit these countries. Some others were visited by the residents of these countries or have been asked a number of times by them. There are many question and answers, then at the end, they came up with this understanding. The problem is, first of all, we do have scholars in European countries who do have the same fatwa. However, because they are not originally Arab, you know, people do not pay that much attention to them, which is sad. In the UK, for instance, we have a number of scholars. One of them, for instance, Naveed Idris, who is my very good friend. He has even generated a timetable for adopting the timing of Fajr and Maghrib and fasting during the month of summer when the daylight is very long. The website is there. You can look at the website. The website is Ruk, R-U-K-N. I think ruk.org or .com, something like that. But because he's not, you know, in an Arabian country, not many people pay attention to it. Unfortunately, brother, the problem is that people are not satisfied with the views of their local scholars. Somehow they would like to hear the views of the scholars from the Arabian countries. So your question needs to be directed to people. Not to these scholars. You need to ask them why you are not satisfied with the views of your own scholars. Why do you need to have somebody from Egypt or from Saudi Arabia to give you that fatwa? I hope I answered that question.
Yes, you have answered very well. One further question from regarding the same issue. That the solution you have given, which of the solution is most acceptable and most suitable from the people of these countries? Like nowadays, what are their pragmatic approach, what they're accepting, what they're adopting? Like they're following the Makkah's time or nearest Muslim countries' time, what they are doing now?
Okay. Understandably, Muslims in these areas, understandably, they are very cautious. As you know, most of them, or 99% of them, are not really scholars, and they do not consider themselves to be, you know, very much in depth in their knowledge of Islam. So they are very that the most dominant view is the one that suggests that you need to fast, and if you can't, then just leave it and fast another time of the year is enough for majority of these scholars, sorry, for majority of these Muslims, minority Muslims, to follow that fatwa. So in answering your question, I can say that majority of Muslims follow the dominant view, which is they try to fast, and in fact, them who find it difficult, they just leave it and fast during the winter time. They have just learned how to cope with it, which I can tell you is possible. But in my own experience, takes away all that point of the month of Ramadan. Because to me, fasting is not supposed to be something that you have to tolerate. It is supposed to be something that puts you in a reasonable difficulty, so that that reasonable difficulty serves as a reminder, as tazakkur for you. And then that reminder and tazakkur would help with your taqwa. Because you see, not eating by itself does not increase your taqwa. Not eating is in fact used here as a measure to continuously remind you of something. It is that reminder that hopefully will help you to increase your taqwa. Now, if you have to tolerate your fasting, if it becomes like a race with your well-being, etc., in order to fast, I think that reminder is not be there for many. But any case, a majority follow that. There is also, however, minority that follow the less dominant view. I personally, because I also have shared the less dominant view, so I follow that, and my children follow that as well. But the majority follow the dominant view.
Yes, Abdullah, can I ask a question? Can you hear me?
Please. Yes.
Okay, my concern is regarding your comment on the ijtihad, which is supposedly in question by the less dominant view. When it says that the verse which says, فَمَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مَرِيدًا أَوْ لَا سَفَرًا فَعِدَّةُ مِنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرَ. So then you say that they are primarily speaking of the state of the person, and it does not take into account the external environment. So therefore, any analogy regarding the state of the traveler would be uncalled for. And the situation that we are discussing today relates to the and very long fasting hours. So therefore, it would be correct to say that the Quran is silent, because the Quran is actually speaking about the state or the conditions of the person and not the external environment. So my concern is on this particular issue, and my exact concern is that as Hassan has previously just remarked, let me give you a hypothetical situation which perhaps is not as hypothetical as you might consider, because in Pakistan or even in UAE or in Arab countries, there are laborers who have to work outside for 8 hours. Now here the condition is not that they're travelers themselves, nor are they sick. The situation is outside them. And for working for 8 hours in a very harsh environment is virtually out of question in 30 days. A laborer who is going to build a house, he's going to carry the bricks or work on a cement cauldron. So in such situations, what would the less dominant view advise a laborer who has to work 8 to 10 hours in extreme sunlight of 50 degrees centigrade? And we're not talking about people who are comfortable in their homes. We're talking about a person who has to make money, has to make a living by working in these extreme conditions. And remember, he's not sick, he's not a traveler. He is bearing something which is outside him.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Shehzad, for your question. First of all, as you know, among the fuqaha, even among some of the very traditional fuqaha, this situation has been discussed in length. And they themselves have come with the fatwa and with the this very common fatwa among many of them, that in a situation like that, when the person feels extreme difficulty, he can actually drink a little bit of water and grab a little bit of food and then continue his fasting. Again, it's a matter of ijtihad for them. However, please do consider that the situation that you are talking about is again quite different from the one that the less dominant view is describing. The situation that the less dominant view are describing, to them, the whole problem does not start with the situation of an individual, like hard work, etc. The whole problem starts with the taklif itself. When you say that your taklif is to fast 23 hours a day, this is your taklif, this